Blackcaps are small songbirds that breed in Central Europe. 50 years ago, most blackcaps went south for the winter to Spain or Portugal. But since the 1960s, more and more blackcaps have started wintering in Britain and Ireland. By 2003, blackcaps were seen perched at one in every three backyard bird feeders in Britain. But why did so many blackcaps change their winter vacation location? The direction birds migrate is coded in their genes. Each population of birds has an average direction they will go, but individuals can vary as much as 40 degrees from the average. Although historically, the average direction for blackcaps was towards Portugal, a few birds' genes pointed them in a slightly different direction, and they ended up in Britain. But for the numbers of blackcaps wintering in Britain to change so dramatically, there must be some significant advantage to fly north rather than south. Perhaps the benefit is simply from the shorter, less taxing flight to Britain. Or maybe it's because Britain has many bird lovers that stock backyard bird feeders. But researchers from Germany and the UK believe the key difference is the shorter winter days in Britain. Shorter days affect migration and breeding behavior, so British birds return to summer breeding grounds about 10 days earlier than birds that went south. This 10-day head start lets British migrants claim the best territories and start breeding sooner. Females paired with British males laid more eggs and hatched more chicks than those mated to southern birds. Each year, blackcaps with genes orienting them towards Britain pass on those genes to more chicks, and so the number of blackcaps with a disposition to fly to Britain steadily increases. This moment of science comes from Indiana University with production support from the Office of the Provost. Today's program was prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger with help from Susan Hengebelt in biology. I'm Don Glass.
2:42 on the afternoon magazine. The St. Louis Cardinals could clinch the National League Central Division tonight if they win over Houston. The Cubs lose to Milwaukee. John Smoltz will be on the mound for the Cardinals in the series finale at Minute Maid Park. The Astros will start Bud Norris. Meanwhile, Jeff Samardzija makes his second career start for the Cubs tonight against the Brewers' Chris Narvison. The Chicago White Sox will try to avoid being swept at home by the Minnesota Twins as the teams wrap up their series tonight. Minnesota remains 2.5 games behind Detroit in the race for the American League Central crown. Lefty Mark Burley starts for the Sox. He is 1-6 since he pitched his perfect game back in July. Matt Hasselbeck is watching practice while wearing a green baseball cap, yet the Seattle Seahawks are not ruling their quarterback out of Sunday's game against the Bears. Seattle coach Jim Mora says Hasselbeck may not practice on Thursday either because of a broken rib. Seneca Wallace is taking the first team snaps. Illinois wide receiver Aurelius Benn played in one of the biggest moments in recent Illini football history 2 years ago, but he says he doesn't remember much about it. Illinois heads to Columbus on Saturday to once again face the Buckeyes. They're ranked 13th right now. Benn was a freshman during the Illini 28-21 upset of then number one Ohio State 2 years ago. That game propelled Illinois to the Rose Bowl and sank the Buckeyes' bid for a perfect season, but Benn had suffered a concussion during the game. He says he remembers nothing of the game-ending drive that sealed the win. And Chicago's delegation for the vote to award the 2016 Olympics will have a decidedly golden hue. 14 Olympic gold medalists, including Michael Johnson, Nastia Lukin, and Nadia Comaneci, are among 26 Olympians and Paralympians who are traveling to Denmark next week in support of Chicago's bid. And that's a look at sports.
Today's programs are made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, offering ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards.
It's 2:44, 16 minutes before 3 o'clock on the afternoon magazine. And coming up, Champaign's Virginia Theater will be the performing grounds for a group that is rather familiar to AM 580 listeners, and in particular listeners of the afternoon magazine, because we play the Capitol Steps Politics Takes a Holiday radio specials about four times each year. Well, the Capitol Steps are coming to the Virginia Theater tomorrow, or Friday night rather, Friday night at 7:30. One night only, as they say. They were a bunch of Senate staffers. They got started as a bunch of Senate staffers who set out to satirize the people who employ them and the White House and such. In the years that followed, many of the Steps ignored the conventional wisdom of not quitting their day job, and some of them have become sort of full-time Capitol Steps members. But not all of them, or all of them taken together, have worked a total of 18 different congressional offices, and they represent 62 years of House and Senate staff experience in Washington. But they do sing on the side, and they skewer a lot of today's current subjects, anything from the birthers to the tweeters.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is CNN. My name is Dobbs. Lou Dobbs. And I'm here to tell you that you can't believe everything you hear on my show. Oh, yes, 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 sure, it might be true, but we have no evidence to suggest that it isn't, nor are we looking for any. Huh. We believe Barack could pose a danger. Though liberals think he was born in a manger. Yeah, Hawaii's just a ploy. Barack don't eat no poi. Odds are we should all believe the bloggers. A secret Kenyan man. What a brilliant plan. Now Barack is in the White House, if that really is his name. And now birth certificates we are demanding. This lie is worse than NASA's fake moon landing. Since we cannot find a trace where he could be from outer space. That's why we will impeach this guy tomorrow. But wait a minute, man. On the other hand, that would leave us with Joe Biden. President Joe Biden. Let's forget this birther plan.
The Capitol Steps in concert, and they will be in concert Friday night at 7:30 at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. And we have 5 pairs of tickets to the Capitol Steps performance on Friday night. And we want to give some of them to you. If you can give us a call at 333-9455, that's 333-9455, area code 217 if you're out of town, and we'll give you a couple, a pair of tickets, and we'll take the first 5 callers who can give us their names and whatever, and we'll send out some tickets for you for the Capitol Steps this coming Friday. Another satirical bit from the Capitol Steps involving Twitter.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. My girlfriend is getting so inane. 40 times today on my PDA. My baby, she wrote me a Twitter. Every 2 minutes something else to tell. What the hell's the meaning of LOL? But she loves her shampoo. Well, whoopty freaking do. And lately it's making me bitter. So I wrote her a letter, said that it would be better to talk like we ought. But she can only Twitter, cause 140 letters is her limit on thoughts. She's Twitteriotic. I'm leaving home, all my bags are packed. But my tweet hawk deserves all the facts. Since I can't commit her, I'll just send a Twitter.
Let me see. I-L-Y-F-O-B-S.
I-L-Y-F-O-B-S. Does that mean I love you forever, oh beautiful sweetheart?
No. It's I'm leaving you for our babysitter.
The Capitol Steps coming to the Virginia Theater in Champaign on Friday night. And we thank everybody that called in, and we'll be sending out your tickets. Now we move to more serious matters around the world. Last night, the de facto government of Honduras extended a nationwide curfew that essentially shut down much of that Central American country. It went into effect after deposed President Manuel Zelaya slipped back into Honduras on Monday. Zelaya is at the Brazilian embassy in the nation's capital, Tegucigalpa, and says he's come back to reclaim his position. His return has ignited street battles and a diplomatic showdown. NPR's Jason Bobian has been following the story from Mexico City.
Thousands of supporters of ousted President Manuel Zelaya gathered yesterday outside the Brazilian embassy where Zelaya was holed up. Riot police and soldiers fired tear gas and used water cannons to drive them away. Zelaya spent most of the day conducting interviews on his cell phone with news outlets throughout the region, including this one with the Spanish language arm of CNN. They've cut off the electricity and drinking water to this entire zone around the Brazilian embassy, Zelaya said. He called on people, including priests, to defy the curfew and come to the embassy to support him. Zelaya was deposed in a coup in June. Soldiers burst into his bedroom and forced him at gunpoint onto a plane and then left him on the tarmac in Costa Rica in his pajamas. Later that day, the Honduran Congress named Roberto Micheletti as president. Micheletti is now demanding that Brazil hand Zelaya over to face criminal charges. His administration has said for months that Zelaya would be arrested if he set foot on Honduran soil. Honduran soldiers have now surrounded Brazil's embassy. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva told the de facto administration that Brazil won't tolerate a breach of its embassy, but he also warned Zelaya not to provoke Honduran security forces into invading the building. State Department spokesman Ian Kelly said the White House is equally concerned about the standoff.
We understand the situation is very tense, especially in the area immediately around the Brazilian embassy. The U.S. embassy is closed because of the situation. In addition to calling for dialogue, we also very much urge all sides to refrain from actions, particularly violent actions.
Even though Micheletti has promised to step down after November elections, governments in Latin America, ranging from the far left to the far right, are supporting Zelaya and say he is the legitimate president. Just about everything in Honduras, including the United Nations offices, were shut down yesterday.
Nobody can go out, nobody can leave, and of course the country is heavily militarized.
Rebecca Arias is the UN's top official in Honduras. Speaking by phone from Tegucigalpa, she said the streets of the capital were almost deserted. Arias said she was getting reports from her staff and other humanitarian agencies of almost 200 people being detained in a baseball stadium and numerous others who'd been injured. She also said most of the local TV and radio stations were either off the air or not covering the situation outside the Brazilian embassy. In terms of the curfew, Arias says she expects it will go on for several more days.
Because I want to avoid that people from different parts of the country come to support Zelaya. And this is the main purpose of this curfew, to avoid that people demonstrate or show support and come from different parts of the country. So I think it will continue.
Brazil is now calling on the UN Security Council to take up the crisis in Honduras and try to find a peaceful solution. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, Mexico City.
The French government has closed a migrant camp known as the Jungle near the port of Calais on the channel between Britain and France. More than 270 young men, mostly from Afghanistan and Iraq, were detained when the camp was bulldozed. Many of these men want to reach Great Britain by stowing away on trucks passing through the Channel Tunnel. Yesterday's episode has put the spotlight on France's increasingly hardline policy toward illegal immigrants. NPR's Rob Gifford has the story.
Britain has long been a center of immigration for those like the Jews of Eastern Europe fleeing persecution to the economic migrants of recent years looking for a better Anglo-Saxon life. Historical connections of empire, family ties, a perception of a fair British justice system, perhaps, and a generous British welfare system, all have made the United Kingdom a magnet for migrants. But in recent years, the flow has simply become too great for many British people. Though refugee groups expressed concern about yesterday's moves, there did not seem to be too much criticism of Immigration Minister Phil Woolis and his tough message about Tuesday's clearance of the migrant camp in Calais.
These people have no right to claim asylum in the United Kingdom. Indeed, I would question whether or not they are genuine asylum seekers. If they were fleeing persecution, they have the right to claim asylum in the first country of entry as they leave their own countries.
But that's the point. The young Afghans and Kurds and Eritreans and Somalis who crowded the jungle near Calais didn't want to seek asylum in Greece or even France or Italy. They wanted to get to Britain. For many, Britain is the new America, and the English Channel has become the Rio Grande. But the recent harder line British policy on migrants has led to British border officials now being stationed at customs on the French side of the channel. and other harsher laws have been introduced regarding asylum applications too. The measures have been very effective, says Tony Fuller of the Kent Refugee Action Network.
Certainly British policy has changed enormously and dramatically over the last 9 years. So they were quite prepared to take very, very provocative and very repressive action, one might say, and they've been successful. The numbers have dropped by approximately 80 to 90% nationwide.
And more specifically at the port of Dover, where the Channel Tunnel emerges, there may be only 10 or 15 people getting through to seek asylum each week. Fuller says a decade ago, that number was roughly 100 people every day. However, if a migrant's papers are in order and they declare they're seeking asylum when they arrive, they are given help by the British system. At a community centre in Canterbury, a group of young men, mainly Afghans and Kurds from northern Iraq, is preparing for an English lesson provided by the local government. When you hear the stories of young men like Hatatullah Nazuri from Afghanistan, you can see why it's Britain they want to get to.
When I come in this country, I was surprised because very good people, and they treat us like good people, speak very nice, they respect each other. In this country, I have a free doctor, I can get medicine and free house and study, everything is free. Very good government, you know, they help you.
Refugee groups protest that the asylum seekers are only receiving $50 a week, but critics say that is on top of a free apartment to live in, money for clothing and food, and free healthcare while their application is being evaluated. 20-year-old Najib Mizada came from Afghanistan as a 16-year-old. The usual overland route through Greece and Italy taking 3 or 4 months and ending up at the jungle in Calais.
If you stay in Greece, yeah, they won't support you like here. In Italy too as well, yeah, they live on the street, yeah, and sleep on the park for a long, long time. And they don't care, and so everyone's coming here and they're saying Britain is the best because of that.
Najib is smart, eager to work, eager to pay tax, eager to contribute, hugely grateful for the hospitality he has received from the British people. But even he says, yes, maybe too many people were let into Britain. And maybe it is right for the British government to get a little harsher on illegal immigrants. Rob Gifford, NPR News, London.
Earth and sky.
A mass extinction is simply defined as an unusually large loss of biodiversity over a very short time interval. And I think that's an accurate description of the way our world is changing today.
You're listening to Andrew Knoll, a renowned paleontologist at Harvard. In 2001, Knoll was co-author of a landmark scientific paper on biodiversity loss. He spoke with EarthSky about what many are calling the catastrophic loss of biodiversity going on now.
I'm not worried about, you know, the rise of evolutionary monsters. Quite the contrary, I think I'm most worried about the loss of the familiar.
By some estimates, he's